This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The situation in the Israeli-occupied East Southwest remains volatile as a new shooting operation leaves two Israelis wounded. The Russian president says crimes against civilians and ethnic cleansing are organized by neo-Nazis in Ukraine. And a senior U.S. general warns of a possible looming war with China over Taiwan as tensions remain high between the two sides over the self-ruled island. Warm welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The situation in the Israeli-occupied East Southwest remains volatile as a new shooting operation leaves two Israelis wounded. The shooting took place in the Silwan neighborhood of Al-Quds on Saturday morning. Israeli media say that one of the injured was an Israeli officer who was on leave. The shooter, identified as a 13-year-old Palestinian, has been shot dead. This is the second Palestinian operation in Al-Quds in less than a day. Last night, a 21-year-old Palestinian killed at least seven people and wounded three others in a shooting near a synagogue in Al-Quds. The regime says the Palestinian was also shot dead. Both incidents follow an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank that claimed the lives of nine Palestinians on Thursday. 31 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied territories this month. The regime has boosted its troop presence in the occupied West Bank. Let's find out what's happening on the ground. Correspondent Mona Kandil joins us from occupied Ramallah. Also, for an analysis, we have Gina Rabat, who's a human rights activist, joining us from Beirut. Welcome to you both. Okay, so, Mona, first over to you. We know at this point what has happened, but what is the latest that you have? We understand that the Israeli cabinet has had a session, and we do understand that they are going to react to what has occurred. I'm wondering what you have on that, if anything, and then, of course, what we may expect from the Palestinian side.
We have first to make it that what's going on and these operations being carried out by the Palestinians and the shooting for all the Palestinians, not only for the political and Islamic factions and resistance groups, it's a natural response in retaliation and in response to the operation and the widespread operation that was carried out in Jenin on Thursday that led to the killing of nine Palestinians, including an elderly woman, including unarmed, innocent people. And this panic that was caused in Jenin, the closure of the roads and the attacks on the Palestinians, the real destruction after one day, a Palestinian carried out the shooting in Al-Quds at the entrance to a synagogue, killing seven Israelis and wounding others. It was declared that he wounded 10 Israeli settlers, and then the Israeli military said they are three or five Israelis were wounded. But at the end of the day, this caused relief among the Palestinians. Celebrations had been carried out in Jenin, in the Gaza Strip, in all areas of the occupied West Bank. Palestinians are saying that killing should be received by killing. The Israeli forces raid the areas. They kill innocent people, destroy their homes, confiscate lands, arrest people on a daily basis. And here comes a Palestinian that is not affiliated to any of the Palestinian resistance groups, having a gun, shot and killed fully armed Israeli settlers in Al-Quds.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Our correspondent there, Gina Rabai, if I'm pronouncing your name correctly, I hope, talks about how we need to put this into perspective. I mean, if you first of all take a look at what has occurred overall, we're looking at one particular piece of stat that kind of summarizes it. 12 Palestinians killed in one day. I'm referring to the massacre that took place in Jenin just a couple days ago. You had two that were killed the day before that, and then you have 32 to have been killed so far this year. So far into the month, we're 28 days into it. And in one swoop, with what has occurred with the death of these Israelis, now the Israelis are putting the focus on them, that they are being the victim. Isn't the media narrative something that is important here, so that we need to obviously put that into context? If you can do that for us, please.
The media narrative has always been part of the war. Since the beginning of this Zionist entity in Palestine, media was always mostly on the side of the Israelis. But now the media is way much better. Let me say something. The reactions of the Israeli on these operations were very much predictable, always reacting by killing people, by killing innocent people. They'd kill even if it wasn't a reaction, even if it was an initiation. So that's something everyone expected. It's nothing to let anyone feel down. But the official reaction, speaking in their official offices, what to react, what should they do? Let me say something. What distinguishes these heroic operations from other operations is that they are individual operations that the enemy cannot predict in advance. Because the planner and the executor are only one person. But although they are individual operations, they have become a phenomenon that expresses the identity of the Palestinian youth and their aspiration for the future of Palestine. And they are causing real threat for the being of the entity, of the Israeli entity. These operations indicate the real hope in the hearts of the Palestinians that Palestine will really be liberated. If the Palestinian people lost hope in the possibility of liberating Palestine, they would not have carried out these operations, and definitely not with this increasing number that we are witnessing today. We have to contemplate the reality that the Palestinian people created, this generation specifically, that was born after decades from the occupation and was not accustomed to the existence of an unoccupied homeland. This generation that the founders of the Zionist entity in Palestine relied on, yes, the Zionist entity first relied on the new generations that will come. They relied on it to be the generation that gets tired of carrying the cause and give up on it, then forgets about it completely. Here it is today, showing them and the whole world that it is the generation of the liberation and not the generation of forgetting the cause, as the Israelis bet, and that the determination of the Palestinians was not extinguished by 75 years of occupation. Okay. We want to tell the Palestinian people, we want them to know by media, because it's our only way to tell them, that we are beside them, of course, and that what they are doing today is on behalf of both the Arab and the Islamic nations as a whole, because what they are doing determines the fate and the future of the countries of the region. Sure. and the regimes that govern them.
Let me just come to our guest, I'm sorry, our correspondent, Mona Kandil, and ask her. Mona Kandil, our guest talks about this individual operation, and of course, rightly so, she says that it's a generation of the liberation that these Palestinians are actually representing, because they're not affiliated, as far as we know, and as far as it's been reported to any of these resistance groups, that these are, sole actors, even though they're carrying out complicated operations. I mean, this operation is not just a simple thing to carry out, given the different concerns that there has to be. Mona, I'm wondering from you, this might be difficult to answer, but what's your gauge, or what's your feel about how Palestinians are taking matters into their own hands, like from what we're seeing based on this particular incident, another one that happened during the month of Ramadan, for example, where Palestinians are kind of like individuals that are just fed up and they're going out on their own and acting against the Israeli regime?
We have to say that every time a Palestinian carries out an operation or Palestinian fighters are being killed by the Israeli forces during confrontations or clashes or even during Israeli military raids, then we see more Palestinians being engaged in the different forms of resistance. We hear about Palestinians that carry out operations without being affiliated to any of resistance groups, knowing at the end of the day that After this operation, the Israeli forces would be storming their homes, would be arresting their family members, and maybe arresting them, interrogating them, and even they would be forced out of their hometowns if they live in Al-Quds, like what happened this Palestinian martyr, Khairi Alqam. We have to mention that his grandfather was killed by Israeli settlers in 1998 before his birth, and now he carried out the shooting yesterday, Friday, and left seven Israeli settlers dead. Following the operation, Israeli forces raided his hometown in Al-Quds, arrested 50 Palestinians. Almost 15 were inside his home. 50 Palestinians were arrested and would be interrogated for being friends and relatives of this Palestinian martyr. And the operation or the shooting that was carried out in Al-Quds, also today in Silwan, 13-year-old Palestinian was shot, wounded, and arrested by the Israeli forces, who claimed that he had a gun and that he opened fire at Israeli settlers. Immediately, Israeli forces raided his home in Sinwan, arrested his mother and father, as well as siblings, and would be interrogating them. So at the end of the day, Palestinians are not terrified. They would continue to resist the Israeli occupation, whatever the price would be, because it's an occupation. The Israeli forces would do their utmost in order to terrify the people, in order to prevent resistance forms. But every day we see more young Palestinians and even children insisting that the only option is left for them is to fight the Israeli occupation soldiers.
Thank you so much for that. Let me thank Mona Kandil, correspondent, who spoke to us from occupied Ramallah. Thank you, Mona. I'm sure you'll keep us up to date with what's happening. Again, everybody, thank you very much. Human rights activists from Beirut, we appreciate your comments. Thank you. Moving on, Iran says its findings show that the deadly shooting attack at the Azeri embassy in Tehran was not terrorist-related and rather driven by personal motives.
Our security and police apparatuses believe that the manner of the operation confirms that this was not an organized and terrorist operation. It was motivated by personal reasons.
Premier Abdullahian stressed that such incidents are not unprecedented. He pointed to similar attacks on Iranian diplomats in the UK, China, and in Iraq in recent years, and the assassination of the Russian ambassador to Turkey in 2016. Earlier, the Iranian foreign minister also spoke on the phone with his Azeri counterpart. Premier Abdullahian warned of enemy plots to take advantage of the incident and damage Tehran-Baku relations. Jehun Bayramov, for his part, welcomed Amir Abdullahian's proposal for a joint investigation into the shooting. Azerbaijan's President Ilham Aliyev has described the attack as an act of terrorism. Well, the gunman shot dead an Azeri diplomat and wounded two other embassy staff after storming the building earlier on Friday. He was arrested shortly after the attack. Now, the attacker claims that his Azeri wife entered the embassy months ago and never returned. People of Pakistan have joined the chorus of Muslims worldwide, taking to the streets of the capital, Islamabad, to denounce the recent desecration of Islam's holy book. The rallies have been triggered by far-right Dutch and Swedish politicians who carried out the sacrilegious acts over the weekend. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi tells us more in this report.
Like other parts of the Muslim world, tempers are running high in Pakistan over the repeated Islamophobic incidents by some European countries in recent days. Outraged Pakistanis took to the streets of the capital Islamabad after Friday prayers to condemn the West for what they call its malicious anti-Islamic agenda.
Burning of Muslims' holy book by these Western nations proved that Islamophobic acts were not an expression of freedom of speech, but extremism. Sadly, extremism exists and is growing everywhere in Europe. It's time for European nations to think about who's promoting extremism by desecrating other religions.
Protesters chanted slogans and vented their anger against the silence of the West regarding repeated incidents of desecration of Holy Quran and the Prophet Muhammad. Demonstrators also called on Muslim nations to boycott European goods over what they describe as the West's insolent behavior.
We strongly condemn the blasphemous incident of desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden. The incident is the worst and most heartbreaking act in Europe. There is no room for such a sad incident in a civilized society.
Demonstrators are demanding that the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, known as OIC, raise its voice against the growing intolerance against Islam and anti-Muslim acts across the globe.
It's time for the OIC to play its role in urging Muslim nations to stand united against Western conspiracies. Europe wants to ignite Muslims by doing such blasphemous acts. Once we are united, Europe will not dare to repeat such Islamophobic acts.
The countrywide rallies came days after Pakistan denounced what it described as the abhorrent act of desecration of the Quran in Sweden and the Netherlands, saying such acts disrespect Muslims across the globe.
Condemnations continue to pour in from Muslim countries across the world. Yemen, Qatar, along with other Islamic nations, joined Iran, Pakistan, and Turkey to denounce the desecration. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says neo-Nazis are committing crimes in Ukraine. Putin said that there is evidence of crimes against civilians, ethnic cleansing, and punitive actions organized by neo-Nazis in Ukraine. He underlined that forgetting the lessons of history leads to the repetition of terrible tragedies. The Russian president stressed that denazification was one of the goals of the military operation that he ordered in Ukraine last February. Putin said that attempts to deny Russia's contributions to victory over Germany under Adolf Hitler actually equate to justifying the crimes of Nazism. Those attempts, he added, also opened the way for the revival of Nazism's deadly ideology. Putin stressed his forces are bravely fighting that evil in Ukraine. That's a claim that Kiev has contested. The French foreign minister has also condemned Putin's remarks as appalling and shocking. The senior U.S. general has warned of a possible war with China over Taiwan as early as 2025, as the island remains a bone of contention between the world's two biggest economies. General Mike Minahan issued the warning in an internal memo that first emerged on social media, but was later confirmed as genuine by the Pentagon. Minahan called for maximum battle readiness. He said the main goal should be, quote, to deter and, if required, defeat China. He reasoned out that Taiwan's presidential elections next year would offer China an excuse for aggression at the time when the U.S. would be busy with its own race for the White House. Beijing considers Taiwan as an inseparable part of its territory. It has repeatedly warned against the island's growing diplomatic and military nexus with the U.S. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The European Union has approved two insects for human consumption. We take a look at some of the European media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. German national broadcaster Deutsche Welle has covered the story and tells us more. The maggot-like larvae of lesser mealworms, a type of shiny black beetle, and house crickets will become the third and fourth insects that can be sold as food for people in the European Union. 8 more applications await approval. On Tuesday, 24th of January, the European Union gave the green light to the sale of the larvae in powder, frozen, paste and dried forms. The crickets can be sold as partially defatted powder. For many Europeans, the thought of eating creatures that wriggle and crawl in any form isn't exactly appealing. But insects, already a delicacy in high-end restaurants around the world, are a normal and healthy part of diets in countries from Mexico to Thailand. They have also captured the attention of scientists and businesses looking to clean up farming and feed the planet's growing population. Most of the planet-heating pollution from food, which accounts for about one quarter of global warming, comes from meat and dairy products. Cows and sheep belch methane, a strong but short-lived greenhouse gas, and farmers raise forests to make pastures and grow soy, three-quarters of which is fed to livestock. If fried crickets and mealworm salads replace some steaks and hamburgers, they can play a small role in stopping species from dying out and the curbing of climate change. It's such a huge challenge to deal with the rising demand for livestock products, said Tim Sershinger, technical director of the food program at the World Resource Institute, an American environmental research organization. Tim Sershinger said, "We pretty much have to pursue every avenue of solution." The European Commission's decision to approve two new insects as food does not appear to be part of a push to change diets, though it said consumption of insects contributes positively to the environment and to health and livelihoods. Instead, the new rules clarify that lesser mealworm larvae and house crickets are safe to eat for those without allergies. They have also ruled that foods containing them must be labelled. Nobody will be forced to eat insects, the European Commission said in a tweet last week. Still, the move could speed up the shift to less environmentally destructive diets. In Germany, for instance, around half the population plan to eat less meat, while in the United States, people are eating more meat, but swapping beef for less polluting meats like chicken. Insect protein could provide a cheap alternative, particularly in processed foods. Between 35% and 60% of the dry weight of insects is made up of protein. The lower end of the range is greater than most plant protein sources, and the upper end is higher than meat and eggs. Insects are better than livestock at turning calories in their feed into calories on their body. They also breed fast and gain weight quickly. Only a handful of studies have tried to work out the environmental damage from eating insects. A life cycle assessment published in 2021 found that protein from yellow mealworms uses 70% less land and pumps 23% less greenhouse gas into the atmosphere than getting the same amount of protein from broiler chicken. Previous studies have also found insects are better for the environment than meat, but they're worse than plants. Still, convincing people in the European Union and the United States to eat more insects could be tricky. Three-quarters of European consumers are unwilling to swap meat for insects, and a further 13% are unsure, according to a 2020 report from the European Consumer Organization, an umbrella group partly funded by the European Union. In Germany, 80% of the people say they are disgusted by the idea of eating insects, according to a 2022 report from Germany's environment agency, the UBA. Disgust is seen as the biggest hurdle for the introduction of insects to the Western food market, the authors of the report wrote. Even though Western diets include other foods associated with decay, like moldy cheese and fungi, research into whether these barriers can be overcome is still in its early stages. A study published in December found people were more willing to eat insects after being told about the environmental benefits. The European Commission's website, food.ec.europa.eu, has also covered this story and tells us more. The European Commission has authorized the placing on the market of a fourth insect, Aphytobius diaperionus, or lesser mealworm, as a food. The term lesser mealworm refers to the larval form of Aphytobius diaperionus, an insect species that belongs to the family of darkling beetles. The novel food consists of the frozen, paste, dried and powder forms of house cricket. It is intended to be marketed as a food ingredient in a number of food products for the general population in Europe. In addition, the European Commission has authorized for the first time the placing on the market of partially defatted powder obtained from whole Acheta domesticus or house cricket as a novel food. But why is the European Union approving insects as food? Novel food is defined as food that had not been consumed to a significant degree by humans in the European Union before 15th of May 1997, when the first regulation on novel food came into force. Although there is anecdotal evidence of insects consumed as food in the past, no member state of the European Union has confirmed human consumption to a significant degree prior to 15th of May 1997 for any insect species. The novel food regulation requires an authorization before a novel food product can be placed on the European Union market. The novel food regulation is only about the approval of a product following a stringent scientific assessment made by the European Food Safety Authority, the EFSA. The authority verifies, in light of scientific evidence available, that the food does not pose a safety risk to human health. It is up to consumers in Europe to decide whether they want to eat insects or not. The use of insects as an alternative source of protein is not new, and insects are regularly eaten in many parts of the world. But are there any health issues with eating insects? According to the European Food Safety Authority, the EFSA, food allergies represent an important public health problem, affecting approximately 2-4% of the adult population and up to 8-9% of children. The European Union rules on food labelling identifies a list of 14 allergens that need to be labelled, for example, eggs, milk, fish, crustaceans, etc. This is to allow people living with food allergies to be informed on whether products contain ingredients they are sensitive to. The European Food Safety Authority, the EFSA, concluded the consumption of the evaluated insect proteins may potentially lead to allergic reactions in some people. It may particularly be the case in subjects with the pre-existing allergies to crustaceans, dust mites, and in some cases mollusks. Additionally, allergens from the feed, for example glutton, may end up in the insect that is consumed.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We were talking about jealousy, and we said that it is one of the human traits that the Quran speaks about, obviously in a negative way, and informs us to keep away from it, because it is a moral vice that manifests itself on the outside in the form of corruption, death, bloodshed, stealing, oppression, usurping, and the list goes on, only because hasad was involved, or the root of these actions and these acts that manifest themselves on the outside, the root for them is actually hasad or jealousy. Now, we might ask the question, where does these come from, these traits, these evil vices? So I and you can have a look into ourselves and make sure that we don't have them. One of which, I mean, I will run with you through a list and let's see if we can figure them out. One of which is the self of a person becomes khabith, becomes impure, it becomes polluted with hate, polluted with sins, it gets polluted with not wanting to share, greed. So all these vices, once they manifest themselves in the human being and they take a hold of him, they mold his soul into something that we consider to be khabith, an evil soul. And it becomes stingy in giving to other people. Such personality, such soul, obviously does not want good to others, rather wants to harm others. When a person has that inside him, where he feels that, you know, he has hatred towards mankind, and inshallah we'll talk about hate, al-bughd, in other episodes, but when a person has that in himself, you don't expect him to love other people. Obviously, he will be jealous whenever he sees a person has something good. So how would I feel that? Now, it's simple that when we see people getting good things, people having money, wealth, houses, cars, kids, wives, husbands, or whatever, when I look at them, am I happy for them? Or will I feel a sense of depression that crushes my heart? I'm saying, why not me? Why them? If I feel that, you know, that tingling in my heart and the depression and the sadness in my heart, then obviously I'm going the wrong way. But if I said, alhamdulillah, mashallah, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala increase for them, and may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give me the same, then I'm going on the right side. So first it begins with the soul itself. It's like, if we can give a example that makes things simple. When you have clay that is clean and that is, you know, pure, you can create like models out of it, and then you can dry them out, you can paint them and do whatever you want. But sometimes the clay itself, you take it from a pond that is dirty, is swamp, and you take that dirt and you take that mud, itself stinky, smells, it's usually black, it usually has a lot of like rubbish like within it, so it's not a pure mud. And when you take it and you're trying to mold something out of it, not only does it make you like really dirty and black and makes you smell, but it's hard, it's like once you dry it out, you can hardly paint it. You can hardly do anything with it. So if you compare the two clays, this is at the souls of the human being. Allah created the humans are pure from within. Once they are born, they're born with a pure soul. It is I and you who darken it. Let us take a short break and then we will come back right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. So we said one of the reasons is that our souls, to begin with, are corrupted, and thus we start to do and have jealousy towards people. That thing is that animosity and creating enemies, like, there are people, like, they are very easy to trigger. They are very easy to make enemies. Like a person says something to them, or a person does something to them, and all of a sudden, war rages. I hate you, I this, I that. They, you know, the relationship breaks down and then becomes just war. Like, they don't give it time. Some people, I've seen a lot of people like that. Like, one instant is enough to trigger them to cut, you know, relationship and sever everything with other people for eternity, if it takes that long. And the, you know, so this is the what we call al-adawat wal-baghda, as the Quran puts it. Wabadat bikum al-adawat wal-baghda. So they have this notion within them that they are very quickly to hate. They're very quickly to reject other people. People who have this kind of soul or this kind of personality, these are the ones that they would very quickly fall into the trap of jealousy and hasad. So sometimes if I find myself among those who are easily triggered, I can easily make enemies, I can easily fight with people, then I need to revisit myself. Have a look again to myself. See where am I going wrong. Let me fix that. Because keeping it the way it is, it obviously going to cause me a lot of issues. Right? So this is also another reason that makes people move towards hasad. Let's mention one more very quickly. And that is love for fame, love for wealth, and love for position. These three things are very destructive to the human being, to his inner stability and inner comfort and inner peace, and to the outside world. So the love for wealth, love for fame, and love for position. We, as human beings, we have love for these things. But obviously they have to be attained and achieved through the right ways and the right sources. Not that they are haram to attain, but they have to be attained correctly. If we do them wrong, then we have a problem. So sometimes when I want to be in a position, a high position, or I want to have wealth, or I want to be have fame and be famous, and I see other people's are and I'm not, sometimes what I tend to do is be jealous of them. And sometimes, if I'm just jealous and I leave it there, I mean, that's good. But sometimes, no, I take my jealousy to the outside world where I try to create havoc and corruption just to bring those people who have these things down. And like I said, sometimes it leads to war, sometimes it leads to killing, stealing, and what have you. So we cross the limits when it comes to the human rights. We will continue, inshallah, in the next episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Economists are saying that Britain is facing the worst and longest recession and the weakest economic recovery this year among the G7 countries. According to economists, inflationary shock caused by the war in Ukraine and the spread of coronavirus will affect the United Kingdom more than any other major economy in the world. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to leading economic forecasters at the business consultancy EY, the United Kingdom's impending recession could be twice as bad as previously thought. Reduced government support, higher taxes, and an overall worsening outlook have all led the firm's analysts to conclude that the next 3 years could be worse than they anticipated 3 months ago. In October, EY's Item Club had predicted a 0.3% contraction in the gross domestic product GDP this year, followed by a 2.4% growth next year, and a 2.3% rise in 2025. But in an updated forecast released on Monday, 23rd of January, it said gross domestic product GDP would drop 0.7% this year, followed by growth of just 1.9% next year, and 2.2% in 2025. The downgrade is at odds with recently published economic data and a sentiment coming out of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, which suggested the global outlook was not quite as grim as first feared. In recent weeks, the FTSE 100 has neared its highest level ever. EY's UK chair, Hywel Bull, said, "The United Kingdom's economic outlook has become gloomier than forecast in the autumn, and the United Kingdom may already be in what has been one of the most widely anticipated recessions in living memory." Hywel Bull said, "While the recession could cut deeper than previously thought, it would not necessarily last longer than earlier forecasts noted." EY said it was still unclear if the country was already in recession, as defined by 2 quarters of consecutive GDP contraction. While the economy shrank in the third quarter of last year, gross domestic product or GDP figures released this year showed that the economy grew unexpectedly in November by 0.1%, leading some economists to think the fourth quarter might also be positive. Despite this, EY said the United Kingdom was still expected to hit recession this year, shrinking during the first half of 2023 before returning to growth during the summer. It claimed the recession would probably also prove less damaging for the economy than the recessions of the 1980s, 1990s and 2000s. The economists forecast that inflation would hit 7.2% this year on average, including a big jump when the government's energy support scheme becomes £500 a year less generous for the typical household from start of April. Sky News has also covered this issue and tells us more. This Christmas, most Brits had to rein in their spending as the cost of living crisis has forced most of them to cut back to withstand the impact of record high inflation. Most people will remember what it was like to live through the 2008 recession, part of the global economic crisis. Britain also briefly entered a recession in 2020, but recovered by the autumn of that year. Now, high energy prices, the war in Ukraine, Brexit, and the fallout from the pandemic is causing inflation to rise at a worrying rate, and the economy is shrinking. A recession is defined as 2 successive quarters of negative gross domestic product growth, with the Office for Budget Responsibility, the OBR, confirming that the United Kingdom tipped into a recession in November of last year. It predicts this will last until at least the autumn of this year. Figures suggest consumer spending failed to keep pace with inflation in December, likely bolstering the view among economists that the United Kingdom is in recession. Closely watched data from the British Retail Consortium, BRC, and Barclaycard showed spending rose by 6.9% and 4.4% in value terms, respectively, in December compared to a year ago. Both readings fell short of inflation, which stood at 10.7% when last measured in November of last year. They were also flattered by the impact of COVID in December of 2021, when the spread of the Omicron variant forced people to cut back on Christmas gatherings. There was further separate evidence that online shopping suffered last month due to jitters among shoppers about the impact of strikes by frontline Royal Mail workers. E-commerce trade body IMRG reported a 12% dip compared to the same month last year. It noted that the final week before Christmas was particularly badly hit by delivery disruption. The British Retail Consortium, BRC's retail sales monitor, compiled with KPMG, warned that shoppers face further price hikes ahead if costs such as energy bills did not settle down. Paul Martin, the UK head of retail at KPMG, said the cost of living crisis dominated the festive season. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. Retail sales in Great Britain fell unexpectedly in December as cost-conscious consumers cut back on spending in the run-up to Christmas in response to higher prices, surging bills and a weak economic backdrop. The Office for National Statistics, the ONS, said the surprise 1% decline in sales volumes, economists had forecast a rise of 0.5 percentage point, was down to factors including rampant increases in food prices and a fall in online purchases as consumers worried about a wave of postal strikes affecting Christmas deliveries. The fall in December was partly driven by fewer sales of makeup, sports equipment, games, toys, watches and jewellery compared with a year earlier, suggesting consumers reined in spending on gifts as they had less money because of high inflation and soaring bills. Heather Bovill, the Deputy Director for Surveys and Economic Indicators at the Office for National Statistics, said retail sales dropped again in December with feedback suggesting consumers cut back on their Christmas shopping due to affordability concerns. Heather Bovill added online sales dipped with feedback indicating postal strikes were leading people towards purchasing more goods in store. The Office for National Statistics said retail sales fell by 5.7% year-on-year in the 3 months to the end of December, with sales in the final month of the year 1.7% below pre-pandemic levels. According to the latest figures, food store sales fell by 0.3% in December after a 1% rise the previous month, when there was a boost as many consumers sought to stretch the costs associated with Christmas by stocking up early, with supermarkets blaming price increases. Several of the United Kingdom's major retailers reported bumper sales over the festive period, but that was largely the result of higher prices rather than higher sales volumes. Recently, the British Retail Consortium, the BRC, said annual food inflation jumped to 13.3% in the month of December, the highest monthly rate since it began collecting data in 2005. Overall, food store sales were down 5.9% last year as the lifting of COVID restrictions led to hospitality industry reopening and consumers targeting more of their budget on eating and going out. Sales volumes at non-food stores, which includes department stores, clothing, household goods and other non-food stores, fell 2.1% month-on-month in December as consumers continued to cut back on spending because of increased prices and affordability concerns. There was a 6.2% fall in sales at non-food stores fueled by a slump in purchases at cosmetic and jewellery shops, and of sports equipment, games, toys and watches. Department store sales fell 3.1% compared with a rise of 2.1% in November, which benefited from extended Black Friday promotions.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Utilsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. This hadith is about the bane and poison which corrupts things. In this hadith, in essence, the Prophet says that everything good has a bane, has something that corrupts it, right? You know, things can be going good and as planned and moving in the right direction, and something can come along and ruin everything, right? What is that thing? Everything has its own, problem and trial which kind of corrupts it and ruins it. Let's look at this beautiful hadith and see what the Prophet said regarding the bane of things. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam said, "The bane of humor is lack of shame." Right? You know, you could be humorous and cracking jokes and making your friends laugh, right? And, you know, it's good to be happy and, you know, make your friends happy and make them laugh. But the moment this humor, you know, becomes, you know, dirty humor and, you know, you show a lack of shame in making people laugh and these kind of things, it kind of ruins everything. Then the Prophet said, the bane of courage is aggression. Right? Being courageous is one thing, but then aggressing oppressively towards people, right? That kind of, you know, transforms the courage into something very bad. You know, now people won't call you courageous. They'll call you an oppressor, an aggressor. The bane of generosity is mentioning one's favor to others, right? You're generous, people love you, you get sawab. Right? But the moment you start mentioning it to others, you know, nobody likes that. People become offended and are turned off by it. And, you know, it ruins, you know, any kind of sawab that you might have gotten from being generous. The bane of beauty is arrogance. You know, being beautiful, you know, even though it's not a spiritual virtue, but it's something good. You know, but if you're arrogant at your beauty, you know, the effect that it should have won't have it. People don't like a very arrogant person, you know, who's arrogant about his beauty. The bane of worship is abeyance. The bane of speech is lying. Right? As long as you don't lie, your speech is good. But the moment you start lying, the speech becomes corrupted. The bane of knowledge is forgetfulness. You could have learned many, many things, but if you forget them, you know, and you cannot use them at the opportune time, what's the use of it? The knowledge is useless. The bane of worship is foolishness. If you're foolish and you don't have knowledge and you don't know how to worship, you don't know the rules of worship and ibadat, you know, no matter how much you worship, you know, the worship has no benefit. You could be praying, but if you don't know the laws of prayers and how to perform the salat, the prayers, for example, right, your prayers won't be accepted. The bane of good lineage is pride. Right? Having a good lineage, even though in and of itself is not a virtue, spiritual or ethical virtue, but it's something good. Right? But being proud about it, no, that's not good. It kind of ruins it. And the bane of liberality is wastefulness. Right? Being generous is good as long as it doesn't transform into wastefulness, in which case the good generosity becomes corrupted and useless. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the bane of everything in the words of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
This one lay. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.